owned and operated, which I think is important. It's owned and operated by Team IM, which is a New Zealand-based company, a New Zealand-owned company, and also partly Iwi-owned. We have a 15% ownership from Ngāti Toa. So hopefully we can add some insights from our perspective into the discussion.
Lee, do you want to go next?
Kia ora, Craig. Yeah, my name is Lee Timutimu. I'm a business owner, also do a lot of leadership and advocacy mahi in the Māori tech community. And I'm also good friends with both Amber and Kaitiana, so no introductions required there. Yeah, looking forward to the kōrero and to the discussion. And yeah, I'll hand it over to Amber. Kia ora.
Kia ora koutou. My name is Amber Craig, huri out nō rangitāne o Wairarapa, kaha nānu ki Wairarapa, and mō Upoko on the other side of the Tararua Ranges. So, what do I do? Well, my technical day job is I'm pourotaki whenua for rangitāne o Wairarapa, so I do a lot of mahi in the strategic space for our taiao. But I've come from being an enterprise architect within the IT space for big banks and for our telecommunication companies in New Zealand. And I'm probably what you would call a serial entrepreneur. So I've started quite a few companies, closed a few companies down. So I was the co-founder of Whare Hauora, where a good friend of mine, Here Te Rangi, was running through, and we did a lot of mahi around sovereignty of our data for our whānau. But my current venture is looking at building housing. So we do te whare hanganga.
Awesome. Great. Oh, kia ora koutou. So my name's Karaitiana Tauru. So just for the record, I'm not I don't have any commercial affiliations with anybody. I just run my own private company, or two private companies, one with Lee and one on my own. So this conversation is about AI and data sovereignty. So I've got some questions here. So first of all, so my research has proved that almost all Maori and just about all iwi don't actually care where their data is stored, or even by whom. It's more about cost and convenience. So, and we also know that tech companies, Team Cloud, Microsoft, AWS, Spark, Deloitte, have all got commitments to Maori and data. And I'm interested to know, what are your views of digital and data sovereignty from a New Zealand perspective? And in particular, Craig, can you tell us about how your company is offering sovereign solutions?
Sure. Thank you for that. So it's important, I think, to differentiate data sovereignty to start with from data residency. So, many cloud providers are out there, both global and local, who provide a data resident cloud service for New Zealand. And to define that data residency means your physical data is stored within the shores of New Zealand. The difference from our perspective between that and data sovereignty, and by extension, Māori data sovereignty, is who controls that data. So, under what legislation is that data being managed, being controlled, being operated, and being ultimately accessed? And so, the difference between cloud providers such as Team Cloud, Catalyst Cloud as well, are that they have a sovereign cloud offering because the ownership and operations of the data center, the cloud operations, is by a New Zealand legal entity. That New Zealand legal entity falls under New Zealand legislation, not oversight from the US, which is a symptom potentially of other data resident global cloud providers in New Zealand.
Lee and Amber, do you any input there?
I'll just go in before my friend Amber pipes into the conversation. Hey, I think from a Māori perspective, certainly party to a lot of different discussions and conversations on this very question over the past few years in particular, and many with my colleagues on the call today. But I think for me it starts with what's most important to our whānau, our hapū, our marae from a data perspective. So we can talk about data residency, we can talk about data sovereignty, and but what is actually important to us from a data perspective to our whānau, hapū, marae. And I know for a fact that Amber has done a lot of work in the space and actually had the opportunity to implement a lot of her thinking around mana hapū sovereignty from a data perspective anyway. And I am a believer that it is a really good guideline and a good framework for us to adhere to before we even have these bigger conversations about where the data should be, what kind of data is okay to have in this locality or this residency or offshore. So and then you start talking about what's tapu anō and so on and so forth. But I think fundamentally we really need to determine or decide what's important to us at that Flaxroots community level. So I'd probably just start there and I'll just hand it over.
Yeah, it's probably a good lead into some of the mahi that we've done on the ground here. So the problem of asking our whānau where they want to place their data is also they're on various parts of the journey in terms of understanding what data is and the importance of the decisions that they make. So while people might be saying that they don't mind where it's stored in terms of data residency, they might not know the full implications of the data sovereignty of making those decisions. One of the things, the mahi that we've done at Rangitāne o Wairarapa is we've created what we've called a Manamātauranga Ahapu strategy. And so we've actually dialed it straight back. So rather than looking at data as something that's separate or something different or new, it really for us, data is a part of our mātauranga, and that we would take it as part of the tohu in which we look at the wider set of our mātauranga. And so when we looked at it in that framework, we know how to take care of our mātauranga. We know how to take care of stuff that might be tapu, our manuscripts. We have an archives here within Rangitāne o Wairarapa, but we sometimes defer our manuscripts to the places like National Library when they need to be protected most, when we decide that we can't take care of it. And they might need the special refrigerated rooms to look after it, etc. So, I think part of this journey is also educating our whānau and going through that journey with them. And also our Manamātauranga Ahapu strategy came mostly out of our engagement with Greater Wellington and the information that they were collecting about our taiao, which they just call, oh, that's just environmental monitoring. But for us, they are our descendants. So how we look at, we whakapapa to our taiao. And so these are our ancestors we're talking about and wanting to collect their data and who gets to consent for that? Who gets to say that you can use that data in that context? These are all questions that we sort of have to raise and help educate not only our vendors, but also our whānau as we're going through that journey. And if there's a minimal amount of us Māori within tech, then there's even a fraction more of us in terms of the iwi who work for the iwi, fraction more who are in our communities and talking about this. So, with the only examples really being like Facebook, which is probably not the greatest example of, data sovereignty, I think as well there's been some corruption in the way in which our whānau look at these things because they've been used to the extraction model for quite a long time. And so we have to come back to actually we have some options in giving our whānau that autonomy of choice.
Awesome. So, for me, often when I talk about data sovereignty and sovereignty, there's a misconception about encryption. Is that something you can talk about, Craig?
Sure. Encryption is effectively either controlled by the service provider, so in our case, TeamCloud, or it is controlled with an encryption key by the tenancy user, so the person that's actually using the cloud or the organization that's using the cloud. Once you have data encrypted, I mean, a really good example is if we bring on a tenancy, maybe it's a government agency. Recently, we just moved a large workload from Inland Revenue over to Team Cloud. We don't see that information, that content, that cap we have no capability of seeing that as a cloud service provider. One, because the tenancy is owned by that sort of organization, and secondly, it's encrypted. So even if we wanted to, we wouldn't be able to decipher what that information is. So that's quite an important distinction, really. Unencrypted, yep, anyone can have a good look. Encrypted makes it really difficult for anybody at all to interfere with the data that is being stored, frankly, wherever it's stored, to be fair.
Yeah, great. Yeah, so I mean, I hear a lot in the communities that people are worried that the government or foreign governments are just about to grab data and force companies to hand over the data. But so with encryption, it's not black and white, is it?
It's not black and white, no. But there is the concept of, I mean, you mentioned in your introduction about the cost of storing data, for instance, the convenience of storing data, and what that means to data consumers, and certainly having that locally based, I suppose, investment in cloud service providers in New Zealand, and whether that be Team Cloud or one of our competitors, is a good thing for New Zealand. It's the circular economy. It reinvests in our economy. We pay good chunks of tax in this country, which gets reinvested. We employ people here, and that is very, very important to our business, to make sure that we are supporting the local community, with not just employment, but community objectives like Moana Moana, other areas where we can assist the community. It's not just all about a global view of the world. It's very much a global view of New Zealand. Sorry, a local view of New Zealand, I should say.
Great. Okay. So, I mean, in terms of data sovereignty, I mean, 10 years ago we were talking about Māori need to have their own AI data centers, and we didn't have the encryption and the technology that we have today. But so, I just going to the Mirai, Lee. I mean, you've done a significant amount of work with Mirai and connecting them up. And did you what sort of opportunities and fears have you seen with the Mirai?
Yeah, this is a really good question, and I had the privilege and honor of having my good friend Amber alongside me doing that particular stream of mahi some years ago, and we're still doing a bit of that today. I think, well, firstly, my first reflection would be that there's no better place to find out what those fears and concerns and are than on the ground in that marae setting. Again, grassroots level within the community, inside of the hapu, inside of the marae, because it's there that you'll be able to have those frank, open, and honest conversations with mostly our kaumātua. And so we had the great privilege of having some of these robust conversations with many marae and marae trustees. And so I guess straight off the bat, and the reason why we were there in the first place was to bring education and awareness around this thing we call digital literacy. So it's one thing to roll out technological infrastructure to, let's say, a marae or even into a hapu or whānau setting, but it's another thing for those people to be able to utilize that technology in a way that benefits their community or their whānau or their marae. So we were there certainly to I guess improve and upskill them in the digital literacy space, but we did see a lot of what's called the digital divide currently here in New Zealand, which impacts on mostly lower socioeconomic communities, and certainly marae trustees kind of fit into that kind of subset of those who are impacted most by the digital divide, and therefore digital exclusion or inclusion, whichever way you want to look at it. So some of the conversations we had were around, how, and not just data, by the way, not just data or data sovereignty. In fact, the subject of data sovereignty was probably a little bit too much for our whānau to kind of get their minds around, similar to the conversation about artificial intelligence. So when we kind of just tested the water with some of our marae trustees on the subjects of Māori data sovereignty and also AI, and it was probably a little bit too much for them to kind of get their minds around. That's fine. Actually, you learn straight away that that's probably not the most appropriate place and space for us to have those conversations. What we really need to understand is that we're trying to take our whānau on this journey of education and awareness in terms of digital literacy, in terms of technology, in terms of AI, in terms of Māori data sovereignty, and all of this kind of stuff. We're trying to take them on this journey of learning and education, so we uplift them from where they are now to a place where they have some sort of foundational and fundamental understanding of these important subjects. So I guess just to wrap that all up, and I'll hand it over to Amber. Yeah, I think we learned quite a lot from our people in that Marae setting. We learned that there are definitely a lot of grave concerns. There's a lot of suspicion. There's a lot of wariness, certainly around the government, kind of from a government perspective anyways. Our people have always been suspicious and wary of all things to do with our central government, but also just the these feelings and barriers of whakamā, shame, not knowing, not understanding, and being ashamed to even pose some of the questions that we actually discussed within this setting. So I'll just leave it there and hand it over.
Yeah, Amber, I mean, we know that you wrote the Māori Data Sovereignty Principles for your iwi, and like Lee, you're at the coalface there. You're actually dealing with our whānau, with your whānau. Yeah, what sort of obstacles and opportunities have you seen?
There's been a few, I guess, education, like Lee said, because there is quite a divide in terms of. So when we were going out and training people on the marae, they didn't even know how to open their laptops or create emails. So that was sort of the, and we were going from that to talk about data sovereignty on the Saturday versus we've just turned up on the Friday. So the beauty though of going through such a strategy that we sort of created here was sitting down with some of the kaumātua, Porangi Daniel Wairarapa and Rangitāne Tāmaki Nui Aroa, so Danny Virk, and got to have some great conversations with them, just contextualizing what data, how that might fit into how we already deal with the way of things. And so for them, putting it into their context of how they might see mātauranga data being in there was really beneficial because that helps us to explain it to our whānau when we're going out to the marae, to our whānau settings. And a lot of what we've been talking about with Greater Wellington, really, in terms of the vendor who's probably the they deal with us on a regular basis and are collecting data, so they're probably the ones that have been at the coalface with us the most. We've literally just held a Māori data sovereignty session with them, where we got to explain how we look at te ao Māori, how we start from our atua and come down, and just some context for them to think about before we go into the data realm. And part of that has actually raised questions like, even though we're putting data in a virtual sense, should we still have karakia across that? Should we still be doing stuff? Because it doesn't, just because it's digital doesn't remove the harm that some of this data can be used to cause for our whānau later on. So does that tikanga still need to be, or does it need to be adapted and changed? And so those are really good conversations for our own whānau to be having. And we have taken a bit of an approach from a whānau sort of hapū iwi perspective of looking at technology to help with those on the ground. So there's not a lot of us here in the tāiao space protecting our different taonga species. So could we be utilizing technology and drones, et cetera, to be collecting monitoring data so that we can know when we need to get up into the ngahere to do action? And then we've actually also been utilizing our collective force that don't live here but live offshore. Well, I say offshore, anything that's outside the Wairarapa is offshore. That doesn't live here in the Wairarapa on the ground. We have tried to utilize those that are tech savvy to be able to run data sets for us. So we've collected, as an example, is Pika Pika. We have a lot of Pika Pika monitoring data, but we don't have time on the ground to be able to process all the data, or it would take a significant amount of our time. And so what we've been trying to do is call on those whānau that are tech savvy to be able to come in. We would teach them how to process the data, and then they could take 20 pages of the data and run it themselves, and then come back to us when they think there's a positive sighting on the monitoring sheets. And so that's something that we have tried to sort of decentralize from here as much as possible. And but the other cool thing is it teaches our whānau so that when they do move back home, they start to learn about the maramataka, they start to know about Pika Pika and some of the other mātauranga that sits around it, so that when they're on the ground they can get running straight away because we don't have enough time to train them when they're on the ground here. So trying to utilize data where we can to make our lives a lot easier. And then I guess the last thing as well is sometimes we have people that just come in and assume that our people don't know about technology. So many times since I've moved back home, it's been assumed I'm a cultural person, which is great. But I'm a tech person in disguise. So we've had an architect here that was trying to sell us that we needed to offshore all of our health data to somewhere. Until I got up and redrew his diagram for him and said, well, actually, this is what we're talking about and what my kaumātua have been talking about for the past hour. And he was for a full hour saying that it couldn't be possible. And I redrew his architecture diagram and said, actually, it can be with this. And he sat there and he goes, oh, actually, yeah, that could work. So it's kind of one of those things where actually you need people who you trust on the other side. So when our kaumātua are saying, hey, I think this should happen, that they can go contextually, we can take that and apply it to how tech works. And then we can draw up a diagram or write out the requirements that is needed for that to happen. So just a bit of creativity and critical thinking in there as well when we're dealing with the right people.
Craig, do you have anything to add to that? Any thoughts?
Yeah, when I was listening to Amber, then I was thinking, well, I mean, technology can do a lot of this, but then you sort of you move the conversation to, but hang on, if technology does all this for us, then we were missing out on the learning aspects of what we're doing in that data processing. So I think that's quite interesting. I think you're going to move on to AI, which I mean, AI is a very, very powerful tool, but you know, what is it and what's it taking away from us in terms of our ability to educate folks on you know, digital aspects of our lives and data. So yeah, a very interesting point.
Just picked up on a couple of themes there. So we talk about multi-data sovereignty, and for years we've always relied on one set of principles. But it seems to me that in reality, I mean, that's a tikanga, but each marae has its own kāwa, right? So, and I think, you know, with multi-data sovereignty, we need to start thinking of it at the local level, at the marae level, and changing the principles like you've done, Amber, with Rangitāne, right? You've taken those key principles and you've added to them and made them yours. And a number of other iwi have done the same thing. And then, Amber, you mentioned about you know, this foreign person came in and wasn't really listening to you. So I was just thinking about the value of our big tech companies having Māori who were raised in Te Ao Māori. I mean, do you think that makes a big difference, or would you prefer just to deal with, you know, whoever turns up? Open floor. And so just on that, so Craig, I mean, I think you've got two Māori students that interning, or
Yeah, absolutely. We've actually got four now. So each year we've committed to Vic University taking on Māori students to come and we sponsor them for the 2 years that they are not supported by government through university, and during the sort of summer breaks and other breaks they come to have internships with us for that period of time. And that's proved a real eye-opener. I mean, these kids are just so switched on, so engaged, so keen to learn, and it's absolutely great to see. So each year we're repeating the same thing. So now we've got four. Next year will be six, and so on, and until they finish their 3 years. And then after that 3 years, they are, you know, provided they've done well with their studies and they've got the tick in the box there, they'll be offered jobs with us. So we are trying to invest back in the community and in the people. So yeah, it's proven a real eye opener to see how keen these kids are and what they are capable of. We've got one particular lad who is he's doing night shifts for us now as well in our 24/7 support operation while he, you know, while he does his, hopefully not too much of his studies in the day and too much of the night shift work. But yeah, it's really encouraging to see how keen these guys are and how switched on they are.
Yeah, Leonardo, I mean, do you think that it's important that we have our, yeah, we see our own people turning up, or do you think there's that bit of that mistrust that's like, oh, yeah, that's just so and so's, you know, child, or, you know, that's auntie's boy, you know, do you think there's a bit of a trust issue if our own people turn up?
Yeah, I'll jump in there first. It reminds me of an interesting experience that we had in delivering the digital literacy mahi out to these marae And one of the first kind of one of the first kinds of pieces of feedback we'd get from these people, the marae trustees, would be, oh, you know, we were expecting someone else to turn up, and they were very, quite shocked, quite pleasantly surprised, but quite shocked that these Māori people are, are showing up to teach them how all things digital, to teach them about digital literacy, to teach them about their technology, and so on and so forth. So it's an interesting observation, but it's probably not very surprising to us on this call. I think what it speaks to is that, you know, there isn't enough Māori in the tech industry, and we know that's, you know, it's around about 4.8% Māori representation in the tech sector in New Zealand today. That's woefully underrepresented. Quite a few of us are doing mahi in that space to kind of obviously improve that and increase that number. But I think what it speaks to is visibility is important, role models are important, and culture is important as well. You know, it's not a skill that you can teach someone, you know, that how to engage in a cultural sense or in a cultural capacity. It's something that you're inherently raised with, or it's part of your who you are. It's part of your whakapapa, it's part of who you are as a Māori person, whakapapa Māori. So they absolutely make a difference. And I think with that, and I guess that marae example is a really great example of how Māori leading, Māori designed, Māori delivery, Māori solutions make the difference. So when you rock up to a marae setting, and you've got marae trustees that are expecting someone else, but there you are. And honestly, it made a world of difference, because by the Saturday morning, we had pretty much lowered those barriers of suspicion, of wariness, of reluctance, of trust. That's the key thing, trust. So yeah, I guess making pretty much just supporting what you've just said, Kaitiana. But I know Amber might have a few things to add to that too.
Yeah, I was just going to talk about trust, really. So on a similar kaupapa, sometimes in these big organizations can be our whānau that are really cool, and then I feel like they are wolf in sheep's clothing sometime. So although they are the front person who then comes to the hui and then signs all of our whānau up, they then disappear when the solution actually is rolled out. So I guess the key thing as well is how, other than just being the front face, is it impacting throughout the organization as well? So that's like, it's cool to hear Craig and what he's doing with those interns as well, and training them out. My auntie, she works really hard, and I usually bring her along to business hui because she'll suss out someone who's just not on the kaupapa. And so with Te Whare Hangahanga, what we've done is we've built relationships and business partnerships based on what's your values, what's our values. We're going to tell a bit each other about our journeys and how we've sort of got into here. And then if we sort of are fitting right, then we'll keep going. And if not, then we'll just shake hands and go our separate ways. No harm lost. So we always tend to work on, here's our values, what are your values, do they align, and are we on the same kaupapa, or are we just on different planets? And so I think that's really important when we're getting into these spaces. Always take an auntie who can call out horseshit, and you just take her along with you, and yet she'll give you the thumbs up or the thumbs down at the end of it, and you know whether to walk away or to stay. So but we also get those kind of people within Te Ao Māori as well. So there'll be, some of our whānau that will be like, absolutely not. If they're anywhere near that, we're not going to touch it. That's a kaupapa for another day, But yeah, I think having that Te Ao Māori concept and understanding, like Catalyst Cloud, I really respect them and have been working with them for a long time because I've been working with Catalyst IT since I was 21, pretty much. So I know what their directors are like. I know that they have a heart of gold. I know what they're trying to do. And so when we go in and have conversations with them, we can be pretty open and trusting with them from the beginning. Whereas some new companies, you tend to be a bit guarded until you know where they come from. Because like Lee will also probably guarantee this, there's so many people have run off and taken our ideas and then done it really badly, and you're just like, that wasn't the kaupapa whatsoever, and you've just ruined it because it didn't have the whakapapa that we feed into it. through the stories, through, the mātauranga and what our aunties and uncles have told us to do or not to do, and yeah.
Yeah, probably a valuable lesson there is that all of the tech companies should have relationships with Māori, and yeah, that relationship's more important than a short-term fix. I think that's quite important. Just wondering, maybe more for Lee and Amber, but what's your thinking about marae having their own servers, their own sort of sovereign servers at the marae?
Yeah, it's an interesting concept, and it's certainly one that we discussed and thought about whilst we were doing this mahi out, the Living Digital Literacy workshopping around these various marae around the Motu, around the North Island. From in a practical sense, you've got 680 plus marae that are technology enabled through this initiative that we were supporting, the education piece behind it. They have high speed internet, high speed Wi-Fi network, all Cisco Meraki gear. They've got a audio-visual trolley with a mini computer on the back of it. So essentially, straight away we think, well, these are kind of the bones of something that could become either a decentralized wide area network or just a local, a local network. You could use this mini computer set up. Server as a server of some sort, as an archive store, as a whatever. And bearing in mind that utilization of this technology is pretty low, and that's largely because of the digital literacy and technical expertise that sit within our marae and the marae trustees. So how what so from an aspirational perspective, how feasible could it be to take these 680 plus marae or less, give them static IP, create a server on site, and then be able to interconnect either hapū clusters of marae, so several marae together, so that they can then start sharing, collaborating across this mini network, or iwi, or regional, or nationwide, or whatever. Now, once you've got those various nodes on a kind of wide area network kind of scenario, then you can start thinking about this idea of decentralization and what would that look like from a data sovereignty perspective. So local data stores, then what else could you do with that setting? Well, you could create community digital hubs, so not just for the marae, hapū whānau, but for the pretty much the local community could come together in the setting. They already have all the they've got the internet, they've got the Wi-Fi network, they've got the infrastructure. So what could that look like in terms of transforming those communities in a way through digital, I guess you could say. So so many things that we thought about whilst we were taking on that journey, supporting our marae and marae trustees. I think the potential is there, is what I'll say. In response to your question, Kaitiana, the potential is definitely there for us to leverage the existing infrastructure that is in place across 600 plus marae to be able to create something of value to our marae, something of value to hapū, and then also obviously iwi and then te ao Māori as a whole. I'll just leave it there.
Oh, 100%. I've already been telling my aunties and uncles that we're going to be doing this. So I'm going to paint you a picture. We have pika pika that are up in the Tararua Ranges, short tail bats that Doc tell us are extinct, but we absolutely know that they are up there, mainly because they're haunting my dreams. So what if we put sensors up there that could be streaming back data to a data center refrigerator container that might have a few servers in it, and we are able to process our own data so that we can then work out when we need to get up there, we might need to start setting traps. Maybe traps have gone off. All these types of things, because here in the Wairarapa, we have a large amount of space that we have to cover with not a lot of people. So if we then start to look to independently monitor our awa, our ngahere, there's also research that shows that if you record the sounds of your ngahere, you're able to work out whether they're healthy or not, and then you can actually play sounds of a healthy ngahere to it if it's dying, and it will regenerate. So this is all stuff on top of we have manuscripts that are that are fading away, and we have uncles that are screaming out to digitize them, but then where do we put them? So we've actually been talking about having a closed wireless network where when we say you can come home and you can see everything, we will literally be able to say you come home, you will have access to this closed wireless network. Won't be available on the internet, but you'll have access to all of our manuscripts that we've digitized and can put on these servers. Then we've been chatting about, well, actually, if we do this here, so I'm thinking like down the Waiohine Gorge, and we did this at Kohanui and Papawai, then we start to digitally connect those together and how we can share information in a more consentable way with each other. And making sure then that we might choose to share that with Greater Wellington, or we might choose not to, and that's okay too. But how do we then pull out our? We have a lot of manuscripts here that were written in 1860s by Te Whatuhoroduri, making sure we preserve those for our generations to come. Having full access to that is really important for us.
Craig, you must have some perspectives coming from a corporate solution.
Sure. I mean, I'm always going to argue for a centralized approach with regards to where the actual servers are, but you can have a decentralized approach to how you manage that content, that data, and the way that you could do that, and this is for any cloud, Catalyst can do it, we can do it, the others can do it, is by having the concept of child tenancies. So you have perhaps, say, for sake of argument, a tenancy per iwi. That is controlled, again, using that important word, controlled by that iwi, not by us, not by anybody else, but by that particular iwi. And then you decide how you want to share that with the other child tenancies in the, in the same way that you might do in a distributed server environment. The problem that I see with a physically distributed server environment is one, cost. It's going to cost. Two, security. The amount of security that surrounds the cloud operation that we have is immense. It really is. And also then just resiliency of that data being for some reason destroyed, earthquake, whatever it might be, fire. Having something in a zone four data center, which is what we use, DIA public cloud certified data center, is important because it means that we've gone through all those checks and balances to ensure that where we're storing, our customers' valuable data Teonga is in a secure environment. So whilst I understand the concept of wanting things distributed, there is a way to do that in a centralized way, that centralized way being secure and sovereign, of course.
So I've got one more question here. Should New Zealand have a have its own sovereign AI based on TTT principles, and or and you know, if we do, how do you think that would look? And do you think that those principles could be applied to other cultures and or set a benchmark for other countries? Open floor.
For me, yes. To me, it's important. The idea of if we think about the concepts of AI, and we talk about starting with a generative AI, you first of all have source data. So where are you taking that source data from to draw AI conclusions from? And there may be many sources, and we're assuming that in New Zealand, in Māori, it will be Māori sources, Māori data sources. Then you've got the idea of the large language model. Well, where does that sit? If it's not in New Zealand, it isn't doing work for New Zealand. It isn't being improved to take into account what New Zealand is and our nuances on the world. Then you've got the processing power itself. Where is that? Is that offshore or onshore? Where is your data going? And then most importantly, the prompting. So prompting is what we're doing to put in, the questions, if you like, to get a response from the AI tool. If that stuff is going offshore, all the ideas, all the IP, if you will, of that prompting is going offshore to train offshore models. So for me and for us, we're very much advocating for sovereign AI within New Zealand, where the LLM is in New Zealand. It does not leave the country, neither does any of the prompting. The processing is all done here, and obviously the output is all secure and is relevant to New Zealand. So an example of that is we are currently doing a prototype for education, where we're doing individual education plans. So 3 or 4% of all students need to have an individual education plan to help them get on with their education. That typically takes teachers 3 to 4 days to do. It takes our AI 3 or 4 seconds to do, because of the prompted inputs that you put, because of where you're pointing that AI engine to where the source is. Now, if you were doing that overseas, I think people would have a problem with quite sensitive student data going offshore. That to me would be an issue. That doesn't happen the way we're proposing, which is a sovereign AI solution.
I'm just wondering, Lee and Amber, I mean, do you any thoughts, or do you think that our hapū and marae would be more likely to share data if we had a sovereign AI?
Shall I go first then? Because I have a lot of thoughts. Where do I even start? So the first thing is the foundational data that feeds it. And I guess how I'm going to look at it is it should be an Indigenous supply chain from the beginning to the end. And I don't think it should be treaty principles. I think it should be honouring Te Tiriti and doing a treaty house model. So what does that look like in terms of this context and AI? Regenerative AI is quite different, I think, then utilizing it to analyze and plan and et cetera and analyze that data. But also, when we're talking about the indigenous supply chain of, say, AI, if we take that concept, what's the detrimental impacts to the taiao that we're going to see on this whenua? But I think that's important for us to know, even if we're not here in New Zealand, because then we're destroying other indigenous whānau's whenua, and that's okay. Like, there's this whole thing of tech from start to finish. What is the environmental impacts that we're seeing? Because while I love technology, I am also really concerned about the environmental impacts, the taking of the waters to cool stuff, the just destroying of the whenua when we're doing stuff. What is powering it? Is it coal power? Is it solar power? A whole bunch of stuff. And just going through all that is really important. I think for me and my aunties and what they're talking about, the whakapapa of everything is really important. So the whakapapa of where we process this data, where does it come from, ensuring that we can have a clear whakapapa of. And I guess that's the problem we have today with data. Like, we can't even get the data part right. My concern is how are we going to get this right? If we can't get the foundational stuff that feeds into AI right, and how we look at that data. And even just the way in which you collect data is a very colonial way. It's very individualistic. It doesn't allow for that sort of communal, environmental sort of aspect when we're collecting data. And so we can't get Māori data sovereignty right. And also noting that Māori isn't a homogenous concept as well, like how we do things at Rangitāne or Wairarapa, I'm sure as heck is so different to how the Kaitahu does it, to what Tauranga does, to what Ngāti Tua does, all those types of things. So making sure that we have the ability to look at sort of like niche solutions as well within maybe a templated solution type of thing. And then I guess the other thing, so there is a question around, like, I have a giant CNC router that we are using to build houses. We can also use that to do carving, but should I do that is probably a different question. So making sure that we have our tohunga within those spaces being able to help drive that innovation rather than necessarily people who don't understand the tikanga within that space to drive things. And so that needs a lot of careful consideration before we proceed forward. Just things like that when we're playing in these spaces, how does it impact our toi whānau? How does it impact mātauranga and what we're doing? How do we apply it? Is it applying it in the right context? Because that's our job as kaitiaki. Whenever we're taking tikanga, we're applying it in certain situations. We're always weighing up what is the tohu telling us, and then how do we apply that contextually? That's always running through our head when we're doing that. So yeah, just some thoughts.
Yeah, and I think just what Amber said, pretty much all of that. But just the other thing, I do believe that we need a Māori sovereign AI system. I do agree that we need to own the supply chain from start to end. And also, why do we need to frame it up using a Te Tiriti principle framework? I mean, we don't have to. If it's truly mana motuhake, then we can frame it up however we want to frame it up. If it's a mana mātauranga ahapu framework, that's what it should be. If it's a mana mātauranga ahapapatūānuku framework, then that's what it should be. But the point is, we don't have to necessarily adhere to Te Tiriti as a framework. And I know you're probably going to be heaps of people that be like, oh, that doesn't sound right. But the only reason why we do these, we think this way, is because that's the founding document of this country. Back to the last 200 years, but we were here before that. So I guess what I'm saying fundamentally is that if it's going to be a Māori sovereign AI system, true mana motuhake, it means that we determine what that the guiding principles look like for the sovereign model, and that's true mana motuhake in my mind. So, but yes, I do believe we need our own for reasons of the cultural bias data. It's a big problem, and it impacts on Māori, it impacts on Indigenous cultures. So if we are own, not only if we generate that data, the data set, should I say, contribute to the data set, we train that data set, potentially we could be training at marae. Who knows? I mean, I reckon that could happen. And then we are owning, again, we are owning that supply chain from start to end. And that, to me, would be the ultimate vision in my mind, anyway. Or should I say aspiration? So, and there's nothing stopping us from achieving that sort of thing. Even cost prohibition, although could be foreseen as a barrier, that's still just the cost. We can figure these things out over time in various ways with various partnerships and so on and so forth. So that's probably my insight, Katie.
Awesome. I'm just looking at the time. I think there's just been some really rich conversation, and yeah, I've learned some stuff today as well. But does anyone want to add anything before we push the stop record button?
I just think I want to tautoko the bro in what he said, because it is always about how our whānau and hapū can do what they envision within our world. We have these atua, we start from them and then come down. We don't start from a project and then work out how we're going to do that, because I feel like we'll be guided by our atua in these weird and amazing ways. And I feel like we haven't seen the innovation that we should have if we don't follow that, because they take us in some wonderful and weird ways. So I think, yeah, it's really important that we are left to be able to do our own thing with our own data sets and looking at our own, yeah, Indigenous supply chains.
Oh, yeah, Ngā mihi nui, kia koutou. It's been, yeah, fascinating webinar.